This fall marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and my guest today, Richard B. Stolle, played a unique role in the coverage and investigation of the tragic event. Dick Stolle was a reporter and editor at Life magazine, founding editor of People magazine, and editorial director at the Time, Inc. magazine group. Today, he's a senior editorial advisor at Time, Inc. His latest book is called The Day Kennedy Died, 50 Years Later, Life Remembers the Man in the Moment, by the editors at Life magazine, and it comes out in October. Dick, welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about the new book, The Day Kennedy Died, 50 Years Later, Life Remembers the Man in the Moment?
For those Americans or people around the world who were alive when Kennedy was shot, I think most would agree that they learned about that horrible event from Life magazine. Life magazine's coverage of November 22nd, 1963 in Dallas was extraordinary. We put out a special issue, and so what we have done is 50 years later, we've gone back, unearthed a lot of unpublished material, photographs, reporting. We've done a lot of new reporting. We've talked to people. For instance, Abraham Zapruder was the man who shot the famous film, which I obtained for Life magazine. He died many years ago, but we were able to find his granddaughter, and she has written a very touching piece for us about the impact taking that film had on Abraham Zapruder's life, on his family, and all the rest.
She writes an essay about that.
Yes, she writes an essay. We have a story on all the conspiracy theories that have arisen, nonsensical conspiracy theories, in my view, in case anybody wants to know.
I'll be asking you more about that for sure.
We have unpublished material on the Oswald family. Lee Harvey Oswald was, of course, the assassin, and one of our reporters and photographers spent the afternoon after Kennedy was killed with the Oswald family, and an extraordinary story. And for the first time, we are going to run every one of the 400... and so frames of the Zapruder film. So we're going to run it across several pages. So people who get the book will be able to know from the beginning frame until the end what it is that Abraham Zapruder took on that infamous day.
You write an essay about how you got to that Zapruder film, and you have your own place in history because you were, as one of the first reporters on the scene, you were the man who tracked down the film and obtained it even before the Secret Service had it.
Well, that's true. A combination of incredible luck and frantic reporting, as I write in my piece.
I would think there's some skilled reporting too, but I'll let you call it frantic.
I was the L.A. bureau chief for Life at the time, and we got the news over the AP teletype ticker that the president had been shot in Dallas, and we, four of us, two reporters, me included, and two photographers, jumped on an airplane. And when I say jumped, I mean it. Back then, before TSA, you literally could show up a few minutes before a plane left and run on, and that's what we did, along with a dozen other reporters in L.A. who were flying to Dallas. On the way to Dallas, the pilot was keeping us informed of what was happening, and he told us that a man from Irving, Texas, named Lee Harvey Oswald, had been arrested by Dallas Police Department. The reporter with me, a man named Tommy Thompson, who was a well-known Texas editor and journalist, said, "Let me go after Oswald. I know the cops in Irving, Texas," which when you're a reporter, if you know the cops, you're halfway to getting the story. So I said, Tommy, go after him. He took one of the photographers with him. The other photographer went into downtown Dallas, which was beginning to close down in a way that I've rarely seen a major metropolitan area just sink into chaos, traffic diminishing, stores closing, people getting off the streets. Partly, I think, out of fear, shame, and partly to be in front of the television set to see what was going on.
From what I've read, things closed all weekend. I mean, it was an event that lasted, obviously it affected us until today, but that very weekend, the town closed down, as you said.
It did, and one of the reasons I said people went home to watch on television, in many ways, that weekend was the coming of age of American news television. Television broadcasts in the evening at that point had just gone from 15 minutes to half an hour. And the three networks covered the events in Washington brilliantly. As a matter of fact, they sort of ignored Dallas because the story was the president's body arriving in Washington. Then those images, those who saw it will never forget. Little John saluting the caisson, the unruly black horse, the eternal flame at Arlington. The world, literally the world watched that. And the world leaders, an incredible collection of heads of state came to Washington to march in that funeral procession. I'll never forget, the people who saw it will never forget Haile Selassie, the short little leader of Ethiopia, walking next to Charles de Gaulle, the leader of France, with about 3.5 feet between these a very short man and very tall man.
And I assume there will be photographs of this event, the funeral event itself, and others in this book. You remained in Dallas, however. A lot of the national media turned their attention to Washington immediately after the assassination. You were still in Dallas, and you were doing some pretty important reporting.
Well, we stayed. Life magazine had a huge staff at that point, and they were flooding Washington with reporters and photographers. So we stayed in Dallas, and after Oswald had been arrested on Saturday afternoon, it looked very much as if the story had moved to Washington. The Presidential Press Corps, which travels with any president whenever he goes out of town, they all went back to Washington, of course. And the story sort of faded in Dallas until, of course, Sunday morning, when Lee Harvey Oswald was being moved from the city jail to the county jail, ironically, for security purposes.
And as he was being moved, one thing I recall reading that was kind of stunning to me is the Dallas Police Department considered having him, go out for a press conference, answer questions from reporters, get him right there in the public eye, which is not exactly how we would do it today, understandably. It was really a different world back then. And you were there, you were still in Dallas at the time this was going on.
Oswald, they decided to move him from one jail to another, as I said, ironically, for security purposes. As he was being moved through the basement of the city jail, the owner of a local strip club called Carousel Club, a man by the name of Jack Ruby, who was a big friend of the cops, he used to bring sandwiches and drinks over to the police department. He liked cops. He invited cops to come to his to come to his strip club and have drinks without having to pay for them. So it was easy for Jack Ruby simply to wander into the Dallas Police Department with nobody paying much attention to him. Until that is, of course, he pulled that pistol out of his pocket, lunged forward and shot and killed Lee Harvey Oswald in front of millions and millions of television watchers.
And this is where, perhaps they began before this, but this is a key place where some of the conspiracies begin.
The
conspiracy theories, I should say.
Well, the Zapruder film, which shows the assassination from beginning to end remarkably. This was a middle-aged garment manufacturer who was a great 8mm aficionado, and he told his staff, their office was right near Dealey Plaza, that he was going to photograph the president. It was a cloudy, rainy morning. He did not bring his camera to the office, and he was persuaded to drive back home 14 miles and bring the camera. He found a place where he could photograph this event from beginning to end, and then stood up there with bullets whistling past him. He kept his camera trained on that presidential limousine from beginning to end. It was a truly remarkable piece of courage on the part of this. I mean, he wasn't a journalist.
Abraham Zapruder, this is.
Yes, and he was always, Zapruder was always vaguely embarrassed that it was he, a garment manufacturer, who got the only photographic account of the president's death instead of one of those Pulitzer Prize winning photographers back in the press bus.
And you write an essay for the new book about how you came to track him down and get hold of the tape of the film for Life magazine. I don't know if you want to talk about it today because it's in the book. Perhaps you'd like readers to wait.
You called it a tape, which is interesting. Everybody today, when they refer to it, they refer to it as a Zapruder tape. We're not used to film, the tiny little 8mm film.
No.
Well, it. I hope people will be interested enough in the 50th anniversary to buy the book the day Kennedy died. But it simply, it tells how I was, got the name from a source at the police department and then tracked him down. And quite frankly, I mean, it may sound heroic, but it's what any reporter who was in that situation would have done. I mean, there's things you do when you're a reporter, step by step by step, to find somebody, like picking up the phone book. I'd never been in Dallas before, and the name was not spelled for me, it was only pronounced, so I had to pick up the phone book and run my finger down the Z's, and there was the name, which sounded exactly as it had been pronounced to me. And then it was my negotiating with him and other reporters misbehaving. It's a good story. It's a good story, and I guess I urge your readers to take a look at it in the book.
And the book, again, is The Day Kennedy Died, 50 Years Later, Life Remembers the Man in the Moment. Do you talk in your essay at all about your interactions with Lee Harvey Oswald's immediate family members?
At the time, our other reporter, Tommy Thompson, was doing a story on the Oswalds, and he brought the Oswald family to the office we had set up in a hotel in downtown Dallas. I have to say, it was the most forlorn group of human beings I think I've ever seen. It was Marina, the wife, two little baby daughters, Lee's mother, Marguerite, who was quite peculiar, his brother, Robert, and an interpreter. We interviewed the family, and then, quite frankly, in order to keep them away from other reporters, we moved them into a suite in the same hotel with instructions, order anything you want. from room service, but don't phone, and for God's sake, don't open the door, no matter who's knocking.
So here you have Marina Oswald, the wife of Lee Harvey Oswald, holed up in a hotel room in Dallas. The Secret Service is all over this case and looking all over town to track them down, and you had them.
Well, the Secret Service was a little peeved, I think, that we had taken them away, because, and they had a perfectly legitimate reason, because their job was to protect the family, and their concern was that anyone accused of killing a revered president like John Kennedy, it would not be unlikely to try to take out some kind of revenge on the family. So ultimately, we told them where the family were keeping them, and I'm convinced, the Secret Service never told me this, but I'm convinced they moved several agents into the hotel and rooms very close to theirs just to make sure that they were under real security.
You have so many stories. I've heard some of them before that we could talk for hours, but I do want to talk a little bit about conspiracy theories, because I know people want to know. There are so many conspiracy theories about the Kennedy assassination. There are literally hundreds of books written about it. I've read that it's the most written about event in U.S. history as far as modern publishing goes. Was the Warren Commission correct? Was there a single bullet? Or do you believe there are some more complicated stories behind the assassination of our president?
There are many unanswered questions about that day, as there are in any traumatic event that is put under the kind of microscope that it has been. But I've been studying this now for 50 years and read many of the books. Read the Warren report and all the rest, and my feeling is that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. He was the only shooter. He was on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. He was a pretty good shot. He'd been trained by the Marine Corps. The first shot missed. Second shot went through his back, out his throat, and injured Texas Governor John Connally quite severely. And the third shot was the famous, infamous headshot that where you can see in the film the top of Kennedy's head just erupt into the air, and he essentially was dead at that moment. And Oswald did it, and he did it alone.
Some conspiracy theorists actually believe today that you may have been part of a conspiracy. Am I right about that?
I've been mentioned by name in at least two of them. They're pretty nutty. I mean, in the years since, 50 years since then, some of the books at the beginning were reasonable. I mean, they said, they raised the question of, didn't he have some kind of help in getting to the sixth floor of the depository and all the rest. And since then, the books have gotten nuttier and nuttier, including one, I love one, where somebody came out of the out of a manhole in the street and shot him, and then disappeared down back into the Dallas sewers. Yes, I write about the two of conspiracy theories that do name me. I assure your listeners, I am not guilty.
I believe you. You won't have a role, but someone will play your character in one of the movies coming out this fall. There are two major movies about the JFK assassination coming out. I believe the one that your character will appear in is Parkland?
Yes, Parkland was the name of the hospital where Kennedy was taken and declared dead there. And incidentally, the same hospital the Oswald was taken to 24 hours later, 36. It's called Parkland. Paul Giamatti, this brilliant actor who won the Academy Award, plays Abraham Zapruder. Billy Bob Thornton he plays a Secret Service man. Ellen Weaver plays Oswald's nutty mother. It's a good cast, and it's being produced by Playtone Productions, which is owned by Tom Hanks. So it'll come out about the same time as the book. You can see the movie, buy the book.
I think people will definitely buy the book. You yourself will have a lot of appearances and events going on. I'm sure you're a very in-demand personality this fall as everyone covers the 50th anniversary.
Well, I suspect I am going to be doing a lot of traveling. I know I have appeared at the Sixth Floor Museum in Dallas, which is a museum dedicated to Kennedy and that day. A very first-class institution, and anybody who visits Dallas should take the time to go to the Sixth Floor Museum, which is in the 6th and 7th floor of the School Book Depository. And they have recreated the little area where Oswald put up boxes to support his rifle and all the rest. It's quite an amazing place. I've spoken there on a number of occasions. I will be going back there. I think I'm going to the museum in Washington, and then we'll see what the promoters of the book have arranged for me. I think we mentioned the Parkland, the movie that the character plays me. There is a second movie called Killing Kennedy, based on the Bill O'Reilly book, with Rob Howe playing JFK.
It has Rob Lowe playing JFK, Jennifer Goodwin playing Jacqueline Kennedy, and Michelle Trachtenberg as Marina Oswald. Will there be a Dick Stolle character in that one, do you know?
I don't think so. I haven't been contacted. The Parkland movie producers did contact me, and they didn't ask my permission, but they did question me about my relationship with Abraham Zapruder, and they went to some pains to find out what my recollection of that day was. And it's important, of course, because I write about it in the book, and I'm hoping that my character in this movie is going to behave as the same way that I describe my behavior.
I'll look forward to seeing the movie and seeing how they handle it. Well, our time is about up, but I want to thank you so much for coming. I've been talking, of course, to Dick Stolle. He has a new book coming out this fall, as we've been saying. It's called The Day Kennedy Died, 50 Years Later, Life Remembers the Man in the Moment, by the editors of Life magazine. I'm so glad to have you as a Santa Fe resident and to work with you at the Lenzic. Dick is a member of the Lenzic's board of directors, and I just want to thank you again.
It was an interesting experience to be interviewed on this historic show.
Well, thanks so much, and I'll see you soon. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, I will be talking with Candace Walsh, managing editor at New Mexico Magazine, about Speaking of the Arts. We'll be right back. Good morning again, New Mexico. We're back. I'm Diana, sitting in for Mary Charlotte here at the Radio Cafe, and I'm with, now, my guest is Candace Walsh, managing editor at New Mexico Magazine. She is here to do our weekly segment known as Speaking of the Arts. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning, Diana. How are you?
I'm excellent. Happy 4th of July to you.
Same to you. Did you have a good one?
I did. Minimal firecracker noise. To me,
same
that's
here.
A good thing.
I guess we're both fuddy-duddies.
In some ways only.
That's right. Yeah, we spent the day planting in the garden, so that was nice.
It's a good summer holiday.
Yeah.
What do we have going this week? What are we going to tell readers
so
about, listeners about today?
Yes, readers and listeners. I'm excited about the Santa Fe Wine Festival this weekend at El Rancho de las Golondrinas. My brother is going to be visiting for the weekend from New York, and I think when you have a guest, you see Santa Fe or New Mexico through new eyes, and you get to act like more of a visitor, and you get out of your house and you do more things. So
you really do.
This weekend is a good one because of the wine festival, which combines New Mexico vintners that you can meet as you try different wines. There are going to be 50 food vendors. It's in a living history museum property, so wandering around. I think that's definitely on our list. And this is also the last weekend to catch the R.C. Gorman The 60s show at the Harwood. DNA artists from the 60s who, when people would come to Taos looking for him, he'd either be there or he'd be hanging with Andy Warhol. So, real scenester.
And that's in Taos at the Harwood Museum.
That's right. It's also a weekend where The Marriage of Figaro is playing. That's a 2008 revival at the Santa Fe Opera. I have to say I did see the 2008 performance, and it was just exquisite visually, not to mention Mozart's music is so beautiful. I just want to look at the opera article that I wrote for July and share a quote.
In the July issue of New Mexico Magazine.
That's right. Thank you. Susanna and Figaro are getting married. They're servants in their master's homes. It's very much a class-oriented piece. And oftentimes, productions will show the Count, who does have designs on Susanna as being like an old lech. But the general director said, "The cast that we've assembled will bring a youthful vigor. This time the Count and Countess are young. The Count is a very attractive, sexy guy, and it makes it more plausible that he is both a womanizer and utterly charming. Sometimes you just don't have that sense of electricity running through the opera." So I think that makes, I mean, even though it's a revival, the cast will be somewhat new. So that will bring new energy to it.
I like the way the opera is really playing up kind of the contemporary take on these decades-old stories that are in the operas this year. If you've seen the ads, they're...
Oh, the cougar.
I know. For the sexy angle.
It's great. I mean, these people have the same feelings and whatevers, you know?
We can relate.
Yeah.
It's as good as TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's a horrible thing to say for opera lovers, but I'm thinking of the great
Somebody
drama.
Somebody just died. Yeah. Mozart just rolled over in his grave. No.
Sorry.
No, but it's such a wonderful experience up there, outdoors and, you know, with tailgating and if the weather behaves. Although I'm looking out at the sky and it's got clouds and that makes me so happy.
I know it. Me too. I want to remind listeners that July 12th marks the start of the 8th Annual New Mexico Jazz Festival.
All right.
There's a whole lineup. You can see Eddie Palmieri and his Latin jazz band, Stanley Clark, Terrence Blanchard Quintet. Those are all at the Lenzic alone in July. If there are other activities, other concerts down in Albuquerque that will include Trio de Paz, Catherine Russell, Yellow Jackets, The Relatives, Arlen Asher. The list goes on and on. The festival runs July 12th through 28th. It's a collaboration between organizations here in Santa Fe and in Albuquerque. That's Outpost Performance Space, the Lenzic, and the New Mexico Jazz Foundation. For more information about all the performances and how to get tickets, you can go to newmexicojazzfestival.org.
Also in Albuquerque area, not Albuquerque, but if you're wandering down to the jazz festival, this is this weekend. So going backwards, today through Sunday, Pork and Brew State Barbecue Championships are happening in Rio Rancho's Santa Ana Star Center. And our culinary editor, Cheryl Alters Jamison, brought me and all of our readers up to snuff on this amazing event, which is epic. And you can go as an onlooker and just enjoy samples of the different, you know, high-end super pro barbecuers. They've got the barbecued meats, and they've also got sides like cobbler and potato salad. And you do have to purchase tastes, but it's reasonable, and it's a fantastic experience if you're into that kind of food.
Sounds delicious. That's,
yeah, you can find out more information at riorancho.nm.org.
Might be worth the drive to Rio Rancho this for the event.
Yeah.
Closer to home at Collected Works, there is a great reading, which is actually today at 6 p.m., Doug Fine, a New Mexico-based author, will be reading from his new book, which is called Too High to Fail. It's the first in-depth look at the burgeoning legal cannabis industry and how this, quote, new green economy is shaping our country. Doug's a funny guy. He's written other books that are entertaining, and he lives, I believe, in southern New Mexico.
That's right, in the Gila area.
In a ranch that he calls, I'll have to remember the name of it, the funky chicken ranch or some such. So he's kind of a character, but also a great writer and reporter. And
yeah.
His book, Too High to Fail.
Are you familiar with it? Well, I'm familiar with his writing because he writes for New Mexico Magazine as well.
Aha, I didn't know that.
And I wish I could remember the name of his funky ranch. But it's funky insert something. And it's on his website.
The Funky Butte Ranch, I believe.
There you go.
Right?
That
okay,
sounds perfect. And so, yeah, we checked out his reading for this book last year and his initial one. And he has a slideshow. He's got a pointer.
He's good, isn't he?
He had, like, standing room only. And I'm sure he will this time, too. It's really important for people who do book events to have that sense of, like, the event versus the just reading something. I think for people's attention spans these days.
So he'll be at Collected Works tonight at 6. For more information, you can visit Collected Works' website.
And you'll also see him, if you're at the Farmer's Market, from 9 to 6 this coming Sunday. He'll be reading and giving. He'll be doing book signings as well.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Doug. There's another event tonight. It's an opening on Canyon Road. There are lots of openings, but this one looks particularly interesting. It's at the Turner Carroll Gallery. It's a Chinese artist named Hung Lu.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is called Portraits of a Chinese Self. And she's coming to us fresh from her solo retrospective at the Oakland Museum in California. It's a new body of self-portraits based on photographs of the artist from her childhood through adulthood. She's considered quite an accomplished artist. That's Hung Lu, Friday, July 5th, tonight from 5 to 7 at Turner Carroll Gallery on Canyon Road. For more information, you can go to turnercarrollgallery.com.
That's such an interesting idea, self-portraits from childhood pictures. I did see one of them, and it's just beautiful. Had another art-related thing. It's actually connected to the Sipapu Ski Resort, and we've got all these ski resorts, and over the summer they end up really using the space and offering great things to the public. Sipapu's having their 39th annual Arts and Crafts show. Other ski resorts have really great mountain biking trails and chairlifts and hikes and... So.
And have you been to Angel Fire, where I believe they have a zip line now?
I have not.
And I would like to try that.
Yeah, I'm bringing my daughter to Girl Scout camp in the next couple of weeks, and I'll go, but I will not be zip lining. It feels a little too out of my comfort zone.
Too much like you're hanging over the tops of the trees.
Right.
Which you are.
Some people like that.
I don't love it, but I would try it, I think.
No, I think it's worth trying. And if you don't have a crippling fear of heights, then so many things in life are more appealing than they necessarily would be. Let's everybody put on our calendar that next weekend is the Museum of International Folk Arts 10th Annual Folk Art Festival. It's such a beautiful, beautiful event. Hundreds of folk arts and artists and artisans from all over the world come to New Mexico, come to Santa Fe, and put on an amazing show at Museum Hill. Our July feature by Carmela Padilla, All the Way to Santa Fe, focuses on the backstory and the current, up to the present of the Folk Art Festival. It's really rich, and it's an excerpt from her new book, The Work of Art, Folk Artists in the 21st Century.
It's one of my favorite Santa Fe fall or summer festivals, rather.
Oh, yeah. The food is great, too. I mean, I had some yak meatballs that last time.
You had yak meatballs?
Yeah. I'm pretty adventurous that way, not so much with heights.
You are. You're a foodie. I have something to tell folks about this Tuesday, July 9th. There will be a reading and book signing by poets Louise Gluck and Dane Levin.
Those are big ones.
The Santa Fe University of Art and Design is hosting this reading. It's sponsored by the Creative Writing and Lit Department. And this will feature Louise Gluck, one of America's finest contemporary poets and winner of the Pulitzer Prize and many other honors, as well as Dane Levin. She is one of our most accomplished poets here in Santa Fe and the author of several books on poetry. And she teaches at the college, and I'm sure it'll be a great event. I should tell the time. It's from 5:30 to 6:30.
Wow, that's amazing. We have such a wonderful, I mean, the people that live here as well as the people who come, it's great.
It is.
Also on Tuesday, CCA is presenting Cave Digger, a documentary about Ra Paulette, who's an artist who actually, he's a land artist in New Mexico in the Imbuto area. He creates caves out of sandstone. So it takes them years, and I was looking at photographs, and they're just stunning. They just look dreamscapes. You can see how intricate they are, and it just boggles the mind. But there's a documentary about him and his work at CCA at 7 p.m. He will be there as well as the director, and they'll be in conversation. So I think that's an amazing and inspiring event coming up this Tuesday.
I've seen pictures of his caves, too, and they're like, am I correct? They're like homes? I mean, they're really, really elaborate.
Yeah, I shouldn't. I mean, cave makes it seem craggy and, you know, with bats and guano. But no. This is more like into the five graces.
Luxury caves.
Yeah.
He specializes in luxury caves.
He probably wouldn't agree, but I suppose you could pretty them up with some glamping materials.
Glamping, good. There's another festival people might be interested in. It's the 11th annual Madrid Gypsy Festival at the historic ballpark in Madrid, featuring a menagerie of belly dancers, musicians, variety acts, fortune tellers, face painting artisans and vendors. There will be acts including Clan Tinker, Four Winds Belly Dancing, and many others. Bring some shade. They warm because it's pretty sunny down at the ballpark. This event is sponsored by the nonprofit Madrid Cultural Projects and funds support the children's playground they're building down there. So please check out the Gypsy Festival down in Madrid. I need to give you an information website. That would be gypsyfest.org.
Speaking of belly dancing, Just Like a Woman, which is a film made in New Mexico. It looks like it was filmed in Santa Fe. Has a belly dancing theme. Got Sienna Miller and Goldshifta Farahani. They are two women who are just tapering off of not so good marriages. They meet, they bond about belly dancing, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. I have a sense that it has a sort of a Thelma and Louise light vibe.
And that, it's Sienna Miller, the...
Yeah.
So it's a major film. It's not a...
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of that before. That's great.
I know. It's a big surprise to me, too. That will be at 1:45 Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and through next week. I'm glad that they have it at 1:45 on the weekend, since I certainly can't be going to movies at 1:45 during the week.
I wish we could ask Dave for permission. Maybe he'll give you a movie break this week.
After we close the latest issue.
Okay. Okay. We'll talk to Dave.
Yeah.
There is an event on Sunday related to the Folk Art Market, but it's at the Folk Art Museum itself. It's called Let's Talk About This, Folk Artists Respond to HIV/AIDS. The exhibition opens on Sunday, this Sunday from 1 to 4, in the Mark Naylor and Dale Gunn Gallery of Conscious at the Folk Art Museum. It will feature artists from northern New Mexico, Cuba, Peru, Mozambique, and South Africa. They will be on hand to meet and greet people who attend from 1 to 2 on Sunday. There's a reception from 2 to 4, hosted by the Women's Board of the Museum of New Mexico. And then there's a panel discussion with the artists from 2:30 to 3:30, moderated by gallery director Suzanne Schriff. HIV and AIDS is an issue in many of the countries that are represented at the Folk Art Market. As you may have seen in years past, there's art themed.
Sure.
With these types of themes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this sounds really interesting, and it is at our beautiful Folk Art Market on Sunday.
Wonderful. Also on Sunday, I just have to brag about the fact that we reviewed two books by the writer B.K. Lauren this past year. One is called Theft, and the other one is called Animal Mineral Radical. And she will be giving a reading at Bookworks in Albuquerque at 3 p.m. Ivan Doig writes of her writing. B.K. Lauren writes sentences, paragraphs, and chapters like lit fuses. The plot involves a tracker in search of her brother on the lam, as well as the fate of two endangered Mexican wolves. I received this book, and I spent basically the entire weekend reading it obsessively. My entire family lost out on any kind of cooking or entertainment. It was so well written, and I'm so happy to hear that she's going to be here, not just for the reading at Bookworks, but also she'll be teaching at the Taos Writing Conference next week.
Oh, that's good to know, too.
Yeah.
Another interesting author will be appearing at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design on Thursday, July 11th. It is Emily Rapp. She's the author of Poster Child, a memoir. She was recently named one of the faces to watch in 2013 by the LA Times.
Great.
And she has a new book coming out in 2013 called The Still Point of the Turning World, which has been called one of the most anticipated books of 2013. She will be reading at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design and talking to John Davis, who is the director of the Low Residency MFA program in creative writing there. This is Thursday, July 11th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m.
I think she'll also be teaching at the Taos Writing Conference next week as well. There are two excellent art walks tonight. Get your exercise on as you look at beautiful art. The Rail Yard Art District has a monthly art walk featuring Charlotte Jackson Fine Art, Llewellyn Galleries, William Siegel, David Richard Gallery, Zane Bennett Contemporary Art, Ty Gallery, and James Kelly Contemporary. Just on Palace, West Palace Arts District, there will be a walk at Manitou Galleries, Wadle Galleries, Llewellyn Galleries, and S.R. Brennan Galleries. Looking like the first one is way contemporary, and the second one has more of a figurative, kind of a yummy New Mexico, I mean Santa Fe architectural and landscape vibe.
It's first Friday of the month, so it's a big night for
art
gallery openings. There is a lecture at the New Mexico Museum of Art's St. Francis Auditorium on Tuesday, July 9th. The lecture is called More and More Cosmic Funk, Hassel Smith's Late Paintings, a lecture with Dr. Petra Galloy-Hertz. I am not very familiar with Hassel Smith's work. The picture I'm looking at is very intriguing. It's an acrylic on canvas from 1980. It's abstract and looks really interesting. I want to find more information to tell you about this, but I can
Jump in and
please do. Thank you.
Lifeline.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, as a writer and editor of New Mexico Magazine, I'm very intrigued by a show at Vivo Contemporary called Unfolded, which has to do with paper, pages, and pen. Looks like the paper here is folded sculpturally. The text, because of the folds, has instead like a graphic design to it. The artists are Ilza Bola, Joy Campbell, and Patty Hammerstedt. The opening reception is tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. at Vivo Contemporary on 725 Canyon Road.
Very nice.
Another gallery-related item is actually a hybrid of gallery and book. We've been talking about a lot of book signings today. And Reva Yaris has written a memoir, gallerist for Yaris Art Projects, on 123 Grant Ave. Her memoir is Sleeping with Dogs, and she's going to have a book signing at Yaris Art Projects from tonight from 5:30 to 7:30 as well. You can find out more about that at yarisartprojects.com.
Another event going on next Thursday seems to be a big night for events, is a Summer Shorts Real New Mexico film series at La Tienda in El Dorado. Real New Mexico is the state's only ongoing film series dedicated to showing movies with a New Mexico connection, and it is celebrating high summer with four short films, each quite different from the others. They will be screened on Thursday at La Tienda Center, starting at 7. There's one called Underway, a Western fantasy from Paul Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
A short comedy called All in a Day's Work, about a hapless guide who keeps trying to corral a group of dazed tourists exposed for the first time to the wonders of northern New Mexico. Meow Wolf has a chronicle of their recent exhibition, Construction and Deconstruction of the Dew Return, the big ship exhibit that we all know about.
Mm-hmm.
And Dusty McGowan has a film called Mickey that tells the story of a down-on-his-luck boxer who stumbles on a unique opportunity to become an unlikely hero. The filmmakers will discuss their works after the show. For more information, you can visit Real New Mexico. That's REEL New Mexico.com.
Yeah, and the La Tienda has a Santa Bay Brewing Tap Room if you'd like a pint afterwards. Or La Planche's restaurant has delicious food, too. And just kicking off on this past July 2nd is the Juan C.D. Flamenco Theater Company summer season at the Lodge at Santa Fe. I think I might try to take my brother to this as well because it's such an intimate and extremely dynamic and percussive event. It just really brings home the beautiful tradition of flamenco dance here and how alive it is.
I haven't seen them at the Lodge. I bet it's a great venue. It's small enough that you can really see the dancers.
I mean, sweat basically falls on you.
I'll check it out. Love's Lonely Highway, a play by New Mexico playwright Patricia Crespin, continues this weekend at Teatro Paragua Studio, 3205 Calle Marie. This was written by the Latina playwright Patricia Crespin, directed by Mags Gallegos. It's an interesting play about three people who embark on a journey together, each one helping the other heal from their own private wounds. And they also help each other accept the harshness of life's cruel game of poker.
Ooh.
While discovering that love, equally agonizing, appears in the most peculiar places. The play stars Robert Lee, Tabitha Bennett, Lisa Fenstermacher, and Don Garcia.
Sounds very intense.
For more info, they can go to teatroparaguas.org or call 577-2679.
The New Mexico Museum of Art has a couple great things going on this week. The first Friday tonight from 5 to 8 is a summer stomp with Judge Bob and the Hung Jury. Dance to toe tap and contemporary country music in the courtyard. That's free.
I like your accent there, country accent.
Oh, God. It just kind of came out. And there's a family fun day, July 7th, Sunday from 1 to 4. You can make your own solar photograph. Explore your own imagination using the magic of the sun, hands-on art-making family activity. The museum provides instructions and supplies, and that is also free, which is fantastic.
And I'm not meaning to put you on the spot, but was there anything written down there about the lecture that I sort of flubbed? And if not, I'm putting you on the spot.
What night was that public lecture? Was it Narcissus Quagliata?
No, but that sounds interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, that is actually July 17th, but I can give you a quick heads up for that. It's Wednesday from 6:30 to 8, Narcissus Quagliata, Archetypes and Visions in Light and Glass. He's an Italian artist who pioneered the methods that broke the boundaries of glass as an art medium. And that's $5 in advance at Bullseye Glass or at the door. Petra Gilroy Hertz is there. She's having a public lecture
that
on July 9th.
That
oh,
is
goody.
The one that I...
It's More and More Cosmic Funk, Hassel Smith's late paintings. He is an innovative California-based artist during the significant early phases of abstract expressionism. And it's co-presented with 333 Montezuma Arts, and that is free.
Thank you for filling in those blanks.
Sure. If I put the piece of paper that I ripped out together like a puzzle, I can tell you that it is at Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m.
Nice. Yet another reading at Collected Books on July 11th, Thursday, by the writer Priyanka. How do I pronounce her last name? It's probably easy. I believe it's Priyanka Kumar.
Okay.
She has a new book called Take Wing and Fly Here. It's the first novel in her New West trilogy, which explores our changing relationship with the outdoors and the American West. The novel is set in Southern California, and it has a birding theme. It involves people taking part on a big year challenge, which is when people try to count as many birds as they possibly can and identify them. Bird watching. This is at Collected Works on Thursday, July 11th at 6 p.m.
Great.
I see we're out of time.
Oh.
Thank you for being with us, Candace Walsh, Managing Editor at New Mexico Magazine.
It was a total pleasure. Thank you.
It was great to have you here, and thanks for helping me out in several cases.
Anytime.
I also want to thank my first guest, Dick Stolle, again, for appearing on the show.